Hey kids, Jeff Hawkins from Shake Them Ropes here, and for almost 15 years we have been part of Voices of Wrestling. Myself and Chris Novembrino give a review of that week's news, the lazy river of wrestling criticism of that week's WWE and AEW, and then Vader Club, where we watch something from one of our past, or something we may have missed. Smart, snarky, and sometimes serious, but not always. That's us, and if that's your vibe, we'd love to have you listen to Shake Them Ropes every week on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collins, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Pro wrestling, well, we like pro wrestling too. This week in the news, everybody's petty. The lazy river of wrestling criticism, Cope and Christian back together. And in Vader Club this week, the go home for Super Brawl 1992, Rick Rude, Bobby Eaton, Arn Anderson, and Larry Zbyszko versus Sting, Dustin Rhodes, Barry Windham, and Ricky Steamboat in what was a hoot. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. Quick health update. I had my first cystoscopy in 2 years where I didn't end up in anaphylaxis. Hooray! Cancer has not returned yet either. I'm recovering. I'm happy. Let's move on. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Jeff. I'm now beginning my medical journey. I have an AC separation, and I've been fighting with the insurance company. I'll spare everyone the gruesome details of the absurdity of, like, getting this MRI. Basically, I'm currently stuck trying to get an MRI on this shoulder to confirm what me and my doctors already know, which is that this has got to be like a grade 3 AC separation, and physical therapy is not going to do anything for it. I'm on the phone like, dude, right now it's just like I get up every morning and I am checking to see if there's any doctors or insurance-y sort of thing that I need to call or do to move the day along, because it's just like it's uncomfortable. I've got a compression sleeve to help stabilize my shoulder coming. I did a steroid shot. It's helping. Not enough. It's getting worse every time I'm gigging. Make sure to come out and see an Elevated Roots gig, by the way, people, because once I finally get this thing fixed up, I'm not going to be playing for a minute. So it'd be nice if you'd come out now if you're in the Albuquerque area. Just saying.
Throw some money in his way for the surgery and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. We do have a tip jar. It's a good way to support a local musician who's playing his ass off on a bad shoulder. It's a nifty thing to do for a guy who still tries to put on a damn good show despite being in pain right after.
As I said in the intro, everybody's being petty. because we have started to increase the booking on the same day of events. So Forbidden Door is in a week. Heatwave NXT will be on the same day, but not up directly against it, it appears. WWE has planned for an yet as unnamed PLE in September on the same day as All Out, presumably to have the John Cena versus Brock Lesnar match head-to-head in the first time where the main roster will go up against an AEW pay-per-view. And then, of course, AEW will be moving to Tuesday in October, I think, for a Battle of the Belts to go head-to-head against NXT. Add into this a nice little caveat. WWE has an option for a certain length of time to buy TNA, and they don't know if they've worked out any sort of deal, but it's kind of like how they did with the European promotions back in the day when they offered to put them on the WWE Network. There's also a rumor that just got floated yesterday that one Lorenzo Fertitta, late of owning the UFC before it sailed to TKO, might be interested in purchasing TNA, presumably, possibly to avoid conflicts of interest with either TKO or one Vince McMahon, possibly as a holding for somebody in that company, perhaps Vince McMahon. We don't know, but yeah, so if you like wrestling from 2011 or Cope and Christian versus FTR going up against John Cena and Brock Lesnar, hey, how about that?
Boy. Boy. Hey, wrestling's never been hotter, Jeff.
Oh. I just remember this
week is really, because they both stunk coming out of like SummerSlam and All In, like in terms of the stories that we're getting right now.
Everybody asks, you know, all the time, because it's such a fallacy because of the Attitude Era, that the competition was what made it good for business and made each other creatively snap a bit. I'm here to tell you, it was just that both groups had pretty deep roster of talent that was somewhat talented. And, you know, and wrestling was popular. Now it's both companies have about 10 hours of wrestling a week. And man, it's the Golden Corral buffet, man. It is a lot of food and it's there. I'm like, okay, great. Here's the other thing. AEW and WWE, while there are concentric circles of fandom, okay. But I don't think one necessarily will pull from the other unless you are a completist in wrestling, you know, companies. And I don't think there's anything you can do with TNA, because the rumor is, oh, TNA may go on the CW to go up head-to-head against AEW to try and draw viewers from there, or Peacock, or just something to help ruffle the feathers a little bit about AEW. And TNA has had about 90 to 100,000 fans watching its show forever.
Forever.
There's yeah. not a talent alive. And you can... See, I think eventually if that happens, it's going to be one of these things where there's a draft between NXT and TNA.
Right. But I don't think it's almost like a brand split. Like NXTNA is sort of like where we're going ultimately.
Yeah, I don't see like main roster stars, at least not the A-list stars, ever going over to those shows, because nobody wants the narrative that AEW, which has, you know, about 700,000, maybe 600,000, and then a couple hundred thousand on max. They don't want that narrative that they got beat. So I think...
No, I know, but now that I'm thinking about the TNA situation, right? Like, theoretically, if AEW is running in hypothetical Town X, they could string together a TNA show loaded with a few WWE talent imports, like a Randy Orton or something like that, and nerf ticket sales a little bit using TNA.
Maybe. They all the guys in TNA don't use their WWE name, so you have Mustafa Ali who uses his, but like Nick Nemeth, the former Dolph Ziggler's in there. It's just I see what everybody's doing here, and I think there's too many people who are a little bit too alarmist about it. I just go, great, wrestling ain't that hot. It's content. It's cheap, but I don't see one and two or three moving up and down in any ways. I mean, I think AEW loses that Tuesday night to NXT because NXT on network is now getting about 700,000 a week.
Yeah, but that's embarrassing because NXT stinks.
I didn't think this week was that bad. I thought there was some good stuff on there, actually. But overall, the tone of it is just, like, I don't ever need to see Dark State again. I don't.
Dark State stinks. They are a wet fart of a faction, and Ava is a wet fart of a general manager. And both of those two aforementioned entities stink up every single scene that they are in, with no exceptions.
It's almost like they're leaning into the community theater aspect of it. Just doing it that way.
Have a talent like Ava, what else can you do but crappy community theater?
Also, speaking of TKO, just for the lay of the land, 7 years, $7.7 billion paid for by the Paramount Network for UFC. That's more than Paramount is worth right now.
Jesus.
Yeah. Ain't nobody ever going broke with these deals because everybody's playing hot potato with the streaming services to see who's the last man standing is going to be. That's all this is.
Yeah.
WWE jumped to go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. You just try to get paid too, right? Like it really actually makes sense for these long-term content providers like a WWE to now basically leverage themselves against the Netflixes and that sort of things of the world going like, which one of you guys are still going to be around? And Netflix probably has the best claim to that because they've survived a few, culling events in the past.
I think, Netflix has like Christmas Day football, but Amazon having that Thursday night game is really something to keep them going for a while. Because the NFL is king, and if you can get, that's why ESPN buying Red Zone and the NFL Network is so important, because that's content that never atrophies, ever. Everybody wants to watch football. It's possibly the most unifying television experience there is. I mean, at least the Super Bowl especially, but, it's one of those things where everybody watches football almost, so... And it's going to be weird because WWE is playing this really weird game too, where they're trying to be all things to all people and trying to like siphon certain parts of their company to different things. Like the PLEs are going to ESPN, but Raw's over here on Netflix, and then SmackDown will eventually leave USA and go somewhere else. And so it's kind of like one of those things where they try and, I mean, this is how they sold it to Fox in the first place was we can be that, you want us to be a sports product? We can do that. We'll just slide right on here. Here's Brock Lesnar. Here's Ronda Rousey. Here's Joe Buck crapping on them during live reads over the weekend. It's great.
And Brock Lesnar and Ronda really brought a sports presentation to that era of SmackDown that we all recall fondly.
Well, speaking on the Superstar Crossover podcast, Tony Khan was asked what he believes to be the biggest misconception about AEW, with Tony speaking about the narrative surrounding stories in AEW. Quote, "I think the stories in AEW have been as strong as ever. The wrestling people will say AEW is great." Bookmark that one. "I think a lot of people would concede the action in wrestling, the athletic action, is absolutely fantastic. Everyone agrees. And also, if you haven't seen the show lately, or if you're just listening to a false narrative, and you can tell me honestly whether you agree with this or not, Josh, I think the stories in AEW have been fantastic this year, and we've been taking a long time about some of the great stories in AEW, or we've been talking a long time about some of this. And you even just said how fantastic you thought some of the storytelling around Jon Moxley's world championship reign has been. People even questioned that aspect of it, and I think that was proven right. But then certainly, whether you love them or not, nobody can question there's a lot of storytelling in AEW. I think it's fantastic, and a lot of fans who actually pay attention to it think it's great. But there will be people, tell me if you agree with this or not, there's people that would say that there's a lack, and I don't agree with this, I think it's untrue of stories in AEW. I don't think that's true at all, and it's really, I think, not only a misconception, but a falsehood that people spread.
Josh, you listen up, all right? I want the papers to print that I am not mad right now about all the storytelling allegations. There are people who are saying nasty and scurrilous things about the storytelling. Josh, I want you to print. I am not mad.
Thank you, Drew.
I am calm. Yeah. No, I like that. That's all I can hear as I'm reading this quote to me. And obviously this guy listens to a lot of detracting podcasts on a regular basis. And it's like, he's a hate listener, not necessarily of this show perhaps, but certainly of other podcasts. And he has ones that he listens to that hates him, whether it's Cornette. We know that definitely was an issue for him several years ago, at least, or others. He takes all his criticisms to heart, and you can even hear it in the phrasing and phraseology that he was kind of busting out to Josh defending the storytelling, specifically highlighting the parts that are really weak. Like, you know, a lot of people, some people might say the Jon Moxley thing meandered, didn't really have a story, and was boring and bad. But if you really watched it, I love that too. If you really watched it, like, I'm showing my album to somebody and they're like, I don't really like this, Chris, and I scream at them that they're not really listening to it. What is that?
Chris, I'll ask you this question. Why is Marina Shafir in the Death Riders? What does she want?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, if this is good storytelling, and we've done this up the wazoo, but I'm happy to do the whole exercise, especially, you know, the more you build straw mans, the more you sort of like provoke me into like doing the whole exercise again, where it's like, we can go character by character and talk about either a lack of progression, like a Pac or a Claudio, lack of general motivation, like a Marina Shafir, or like a lack of development, like a Wheeler Yuta. He just got turned into random emo scrub guy X. And then Moxley, you introduce a plot device of putting the belt into a briefcase, and that meant nothing. That was sort of the whole arc of the story, and it meant nothing. In the end, we just opened the briefcase, and there the belt was.
Here's how I'm going to parse this, because I think there's two sections of this, and one part is Tony conflating something. I think he listens to Dave and Brian review Dynamite, and he probably listens to John Pollock and Waiting. Those are probably the two podcasts he really listens to who critique his work. And Brian will critique the hell out of something that doesn't make sense. He will just, this doesn't make sense, it's not very good, I'm not going to wait to see it play out, whatever. And Dave will come in and go, no, I think, look, if you really remember this, and this, then it's a really good story type thing. Now, the other thing he's doing is he's conflating booking being logical in matches with good storytelling. Like, for example, in a tag match, if somebody pins the world champion before the big pay-per-view, yes, that's logical booking. It's not necessarily great storytelling. You know, I think that's the other thing, because, like, Dave puts that part over huge in terms of, yeah, I thought it was logical, and I thought the match was pretty good. So that's good storytelling, whatever. I think the storytelling is lacking. I think there's a lack of heat, and I think there's way too many.
Well, I think logic alone is not enough to make a story, right?
Correct. You know, correct. There needs to be emotion.
Your impression of Dave Meltzer here, which I felt like is a very accurate impression. It's like, oh, the match was logical. The wrestling was good. And like, there's like a head nodding, like, therefore it was good. And when someone goes, that's not enough for me, pal, there are people I think who are still not getting that there's more to telling a good story, whether we're talking about wrestling or anything else, and just having the story make sense. It's got to make you feel something. It's got to be interesting and novel, maybe a twist on the familiar, taking, you know, a familiar sort of storytelling element and doing something different with it. I mean, there's any number of things that make for a good story. Just having, you know, the sun comes up, John walked to the store, and as he was walking home, the sun was setting, and then he got home and he pulled out the milk and he drank directly from the container. That's a story. It's logical, but that's not enough to be a good story.
And party matches aren't going to get it done, because they're party matches.
Right.
They're just there to do a bunch of moves and stuff. And it's like, oh no, they're setting up this feud between Brodito and whoever, because they're both on opposite sides. And you see he hit him. So therefore it's like, no, dude, how does Brodito feel about all this? What is their narrative arc within this tournament, et cetera, et cetera. We never get that because we're too busy. Let's go to the ring and watch them do their stuff. That, you know, okay, we're going to let Brody King dive on people every week.
Yeah, we don't see characterization on the Brodito tag team, just to name one here, like a lot on Dynamite. Maybe they do that on one of the other unneeded satellite shows. But like on Dynamite, Brodito just shows up there and I'm supposed to accept them as a premise. Like a... Yeah. Formidable Wahoo McDaniel level presence on my screen with no exposition.
Yeah, I mean, and Wahoo had an aura that Brody King does not yet have, although he has fans who go, oh, cool, look, he's big and he can dive. It's like, okay, great. He's been doing the same gimmick since House of Black. You know?
I mean, it does, in a way, it's a very revealing quote, because it gets into him not knowing what he doesn't know. And we can see that sort of fourth quadrant of the unknown unknowns for Tony Khan. He is kind of missing this bigger picture about what makes a good story. Because he just likes playing with the G.I. Joes in his Kinects ring.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great to have... Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is. That's perfect, as a matter of fact. Microman, La Hiedra, La Parca, Fabi Apache, Nino Hamburguesa, Messias, and Lady Flamer have signed WWE contracts for AAA and are already being merchandised. Triple Mania this weekend, Chris. Your girl Lola Vice is in a multi-person tag on that thing, too. Should be kind of fun. If she does that whole I'm a Latina and starts dancing thing, she gets over in AAA.
I like for her, I like these AAA opportunities, because NXT's kind of turned into mid-card hell for so many people. And like, this at least gives her an opportunity to maybe once again show management that like she's obviously a demographic home run with the right crowd. So you just got to put her in front of the right audience, the right gimmick, that she's over like Rover every time.
Never say that I never teed anything up for you, Chris. WWE submitted new trademark filings this week for Ridge Holland, WWE Thunderdome, and Slapjack.
He's coming back?
I don't know if Shane Haste is coming back. Ridge Holland might be becoming Slapjack. You never know.
Oh, I don't see. Okay.
I don't think the Thunderdome's coming back. I think they're just doing it to keep the trademarks, but we'll see.
Right, but you know, this is interesting. I think the Slapjack character is such a strong gimmick that, well, Shane Haste certainly loved him in the mask, of course. I would be very interested to see someone else assume this role, kind of like a Doctor Who sort of thing. Maybe every so often, every generation needs a different Slapjack.
Would you be as big of a fan of somebody else in the Slapjack uniform? Because you have said yourself, you are not a fan of Shane Haste, but you are a fan of Slapjack.
Of Slapjack, so right. Yeah.
So let's say the next Slapjack is Nia Jax or Carmen Petrovich or something like that.
Well, that would be a Mrs. Jack situation.
Might be a Slap and Jill.
Miss Jack, Slap Jill. There's a number of different ways.
Nia Slap Jack. Oh, there it is. Nia Slap Jacks.
Nia Slap Jacks. Yeah, I didn't see him right playing. I think, look, Jeff, every generation gets a new James Bond, right? You can't have Roger Moore or Sean Connery in the role forever. Eventually, great actors age out of these timeless roles. And yeah, I'm my heart and my mind is open to someone else donning the mask.
Oh, the possibilities are endless, aren't they?
Okay, I mean, you know, if Ludwig Kaiser, after he gets done, brought him.
Ludwig Kaiser,
if he's
goes
looking
on
for something to do.
No, I got it. Ludwig Kaiser goes on a run of various masked people in the WWE. We get Max Moon. We get the Killer Bees. He passes by a Blue Blazer uniform and goes, nope, can't do that one.
Fantasio. He could be Fantasio. I'm trying to think of
Captain Canada, or whatever the one Miz did when he got fired that one time.
He could do a little Chainsaw Charlie.
Chainsaw Charlie would be a good one. Yeah, sure. He could do Mankind.
That'd be it. Would be fun. It would be fun if he just assumed every sub mid card masked gimmick.
And I would not. And the moment he gets that gimmick, he shouldn't answer his phone when the next cuts come up because who's next?
No joke. No. He's done at that point, but. And he's a very good wrestler. He's actually quite good as El Gran Americano.
He's so good.
Dude, his adaptation of his match style and his offensive style, because we've now seen him early Imperium in NXT, but pre-Imperium where he had one sort of match style. In Imperium, it's a little less overtly arrogant or whatever, but it's still a little bit of that. And then, now as, El Gran Americano, he's, doing lucha style stuff well. He's a very gifted talent.
Comings and goings, re-signed to AEW, the Gates of Agony, Kyle Fletcher, and Hook has signed a new deal with AEW. Okay. Gone from WWE officially, Ashanti the Adonis wrote that he is officially gone, but also Karrion Kross and Scarlett were moved to the alumni section of the roster, but, and there's always this but with that kind of tone, some think it's a very elaborate work of some kind while he's on this book tour. He might appear in other places to keep up the notion that he's in quote-unquote negotiation with WWE, trying to get the Karrion Kross chance to continue on Raw and whatnot. And Dave, being Captain Obvious, says, well, if he signs to AEW, you know it's real. They never let him do that. I like Karrion Kross and Scarlett as mouthpieces. I don't necessarily need Karrion Kross in the ring. And it's not that he's bad in the ring.
Is Karrion great in the ring? Yeah, he's okay. He could be good in a tag team.
I'd love him to be to get signed by AEW and be the spokesperson for LFI. Like Roosh and the Beast Mortos and Karrion Kross. That would be a decent crew to me. I get why, but then again, let me put it this way. I'd rather have Karrion Kross on my roster as a guy who can talk than possibly jet speed right now. And I like Speedball Mike Bailey a lot. But who do you have more value in terms of your product? A great wrestler who doesn't have any personality and is small and can fly and whatnot? Or a guy who can talk and at least makes things interesting for your mid-card?
Yeah, I mean, but then it gets back to what is good storytelling, Jeff. And if all it is logic and then great wrestling, then you obviously prioritize a Mike Bailey over a Karrion Kross.
Heyman compared Karrion Kross to Stone Cold Steve Austin. I went, that's a little over the top. With we wow. said this with Ariel Helwani. And that's, I mean, that's also where, that's also where you kind of, that's also where you kind of go, hold on. This might be an elaborate work of some kind. I compare his presence to like Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah. I like maybe bringing back Cross and Scarlett as like a Page Kimberly tweenery sort of thing might be interesting.
Let me ask that kind of same cadence as DDP a little bit, kind of has the same Jersey accent there. It really reminds me, like, and I liked the Sammy story. It just didn't go anywhere for a number of weeks. It's just, I'm going to make you do this. And then you had the match stipulation and nobody adhered to the stipulation after the match. It was just the match is over. That's it. Goodbye. Nobody said anything. Nobody said you were right. All on, they just dropped it, which it's like, okay, great. I can go either way. I just find the people who go on the internet and are like, I don't want AEW to sign Karrion Kross. He can't wrestle. Just like, dude,
oh my God,
this show needs personality right now, and he has it. I would take him in a minute, but that's me, and I'd figure out how to use him.
Yeah, I think he's been underutilized. If I never saw him wrestle again, I'm okay. I was, Jeff, I was there in Dallas the night Jeff Hardy pinned Karrion Kross. I saw it.
Was this it?
That was on a Monday Night Raw. They had like Hardy versus Karrion Kross.
Oh, that's right. Oh my God. I had forgotten all about that. Yeah. Like, in short time too, it was like,
yeah,
that was when Vince was in charge and he didn't like Karrion Kross, didn't get it, and I think he wanted to basically push Scarlett as something and get in between those two. Noticeably, I remember when I saw that NXT entrance, the Fallen Prey with the bird, and she's kind of singing as the harbinger of Karrion Kross coming down. Then he comes in, does that. I go, you put that on a WrestleMania stage, it gets over. And
oh yeah,
I thought it would, but I you know, maybe it did. Maybe it was just too hokey. I'm probably Undertaker went, you can't do supernatural, brother. That's my gimmick. It's like, all right, dude.
Well, it was like kind of non-committal too. Like, yes, the TikTok thing. It didn't necessarily add up to a full character. Like,
they didn't know what they wanted with him. They either wanted guy or spooky guy or crazy guy or guy with
Someone Sean O'Hare. I mean, it to me, I feel like it worked. The gimmick or the assemblage of parts that maybe works the best is Sean O'Hare with a bit of a clairvoyant streak. So, yeah, like, he is able to predict the future to some extent, but also uses that ability to manipulate people to get the worst out of them. Like, I think that there's something there with that.
Agreed. Let's head to the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever we had time for. Let me give kudos to an actual logical promo. And that is one Los Angeles Knight, LA Knight. That promo on Raw, I was watching that going, he's exactly right about everything he's saying right now. He was the last one to beat Seth Rollins. CM Punk ruined his title match to get him DQ'd. And now, you know, hey, I'm gonna make the call. You're gonna be my partner. Like, it's not really animus, but there's still a little tinge of, hey, you need to get behind me before you get your next shot, buddy boy. Sure, you got screwed, but I haven't gotten the world title yet. I'd like a turn with it before you get it, kind of a thing. I was watching this and I was like, man, I think they finally got a handle on this character a little bit. Give him a little bit more of a chip. Give him CM Punk without being totally, totally anti-authoritarian or going off the rails or what. You know, Punk has that moment where, you know, he's going to go off script or something. LA Knight, not so much. But that said, I do hate this four-way because it's three baby faces versus a heel. And it makes no damn sense that the heel
wins. Yeah, I mean, looking at kind of historical booking patterns, I read this LA Knight stuff as the setup for him to turn heel during this match.
Oh, really?
Like, that's how we're getting LA Knight out of the shuffle here.
Huh, because I see him being in War Games with this team. Maybe he turns then as kind of the anti-thing. You remember when he was in with in NXT when they did the War Games where it was the old school guys versus the new blood type thing, and all of a sudden LA Knight's on this team and you're like, isn't he a heel? And then it's kind of like he cuts this promo and you go, okay, maybe you can trust him or whatever. I think he kind of is going to do the lone wolf thing and then maybe turn heel during War Games, possibly.
I see this setup here against Rollins just further heightening the tensions between him and Punk and Uso.
Yeah. Same. And there is going to be, coexist. And then it becomes, then they lose their babyface shine amongst the three of them because they're all squabbling amongst themselves.
Yeah.
And it's a total Vince McMahon, ruthless aggression type move. You know, it's like, can you backstab your friends to get the title type of a thing? And you're just like, God.
And you're totally right. It loses it loses the fans' babyface adulation because like fans kind of would like, want all their baby faces to just go and smoke it out. You know what I mean? Like, go have a smoke session, talk about this. Figure it out.
I need the boiler room and they're all just like, it's like that 70s show.
It's 70s show. Yeah. Right.
Around the circle. Dude.
They force Punk to get secondhand high. Like,
oh yeah. Come on, straight edge.
The fan said to smoke it out. I don't want to smoke it out. You still have to sit in the room.
Take something. Your turn.
Man. All right. So, we've already talked about Algarón Americano. I've been enjoying that. I guess let's go to NXT.
Okay, I'll double back to Raw for a point after you get all right. The first point.
Yeah, so I beat the Lash Legend Nia Jax thing happened to open up this show. What are we doing with Lash Legend? Like, we build her up. We spend a lot of time building her up. And then you put her in a match against a veteran who is like over the age of 40, so is like on at the performer trainer sort of stage of their career, and then you have Lash Legend lose to them. What is that?
Main roster should always beat people on NXT thinking, and I don't agree with it, but I think that's what it is.
That's not what happens though all the time though. You know what I mean? Like for example, Lyra Valkyrie beating Becky Lynch.
Right.
You know, so
I don't know. How about that for an answer? Can I just
they've spent like the better part of 4 weeks, maybe more than that, building up Lash Legend and, you know, trying to make this a thing, and then it gets to the big, you know, in immovable force versus the unstoppable, or the unstoppable force versus the immovable object. And the unstoppable force gets stopped. That's not great. That is not great storytelling.
And then you follow it up, and I'll use another example. Alba Fire. I love Kaylee Ray. I love Alba Fire. She is great. She has been the MVP in a couple of War Games that I've watched. I think she's fantastic. I kind of like Kendall Gray. I see her kind of as a Tim Horner type, but I mean, she has wrestling skills as opposed to gymnastic skills. And I really enjoy, and I enjoyed that match watching both of them work. Who needed the win more? The member of the Secret Hervis or Kendall Gray? Kendall Gray needed that win more. You know, Lash Legend right. needed that win more. I mean, these are people that you eventually want to bring to your main roster as winners, as opposed to people who have been there a while type of a thing. And I just, especially if you have both those matches on the same card, pick one of those people to win and then act accordingly. Like, you can't have a night of main roster versus NXT and just have the main, it's like those Survivor Series where they used to do brand, and like Raw would just beat the snot out of SmackDown because Vince wanted his A show to always be the A show type of a thing. It's just, oh, but like one guy on SmackDown who's seen as a star in a Raw game would get the win there, you know, kind of thing. Like, it's just one of the main roster people need to lose on Tuesday night. That's all.
Yeah, oh yeah, especially the Secret Hervis. It's like, you know, them losing in a banana peel roll up does not hurt Alba Fire in this character at all. You know, like
they're
this
so
is not
fantastic though, that Secret Hervis gimmick. And I can't remember her name right now. Chelsea Green.
Yeah.
We're going to do a
like her with a, yes. No, like honestly, the best thing that is happening on this show right now is, Ethan Page, Chelsea Green, the Secret Hervis, in my opinion. It's stupid, but like, it at least is stupid in the falls into the classic wrestling column of things. Whereas like, man, Trick Williams is so stale. Like I feel like there is not a fresh pairing left for him on this roster. He needs to go away for a while at this point.
You know what the pairing is? It's Carmelo coming down.
Yeah. Yes. At this point, it's like Carmelo comes down and slaps some sense into him.
Because he keeps saying I'm him or whatever. He'd been taking some of his lines. Let me circle back to Raw here for a quick one. Y'all know I love me some Aunt Pam. Big fan of Bailey. What are we doing? We had her do damage control, and she was the heel. And then everybody turned on everybody on damage control turned on her. But then she wasn't a babyface. And then she kind of was a baby face. And then she kind of had a baby face with an edge thing kind of going. And then she runs into Lyra, who's a baby face, but more of a baby face. She goes a little bit more heelish, but she is her partner after all, after a while. And then she goes even more heelish, trying to get at Becky. And now she's on a journey of the soul, I would guess, with that promo type thing. And I'm just like, have we forgotten who the hell this woman was? when she was the most pure baby face we ever had on the NXT roster. And then we bring her up to lose to Alexa Bliss in a kendo stick. I don't see. So we're going to turn her dark and evil and maybe, I don't know, Wyatt Six her or something like that. The Dark Bailey story has already been told. It was told when she was a role model for the most part.
They're still just coming out of that at this point.
Right. It's like they forgot. They look at her and they have no idea, I think, what to do with her, because it's like, well, we have other people we want to push. We kind of have a congested mid-card too, with people that are on the ascent and people we don't necessarily want to lower. And I don't know, man. I'm a little frustrated by it, because I think she is still bell to bell one of the best performers they have. No disrespect to like Io or Asuka, which is a feud I am here for, but I have no idea what they're going to do with her other than repackage her yet again. And then the moment she does that heel laugh, it's done. Because it's such a great laugh. I hate it so much. But that's all I have to say. I just had to get a little bit of venting out about that. It's your turn, sir.
Yeah, I, no, and I mean, like, just as I'm looking just through the raw results generally, EO's doing some nice work right now. It's not that there's no good, good stuff on here. I honest for what it is, Dominic and El Grande Americano actually make for a very entertaining tag team.
Yes.
Like you actually have two pretty talented guys who are doing really good character work. And like that whole thing with the faceplate was stupid, but entertainingly stupid. At least
it was the right kind of stupid. It was the unrepentant stupidity, which is good for wrestling.
Yeah, no, I and like underneath all the stupidity, El Grande Americano is actually using really good fundamentals and stuff to keep up the illusion of being some sort of luchador of some sort. And then I guess now we move over to AEW Dynamite.
Well, let me give one more note on because I didn't want to circle back a second time, but I really liked that JC and Fallon tag team. I did. I think JC's doing much better work as a double champ than she was as a single champ. Fallon has found some gear in here before the eventual breakup, but that match was a lot of fun. I think the TNA experience has been overall a positive for JC Jane working against like Masha Slamovich, etc. That's why I think it's eventually going to become a brand split type thing where we just start sending young kids over to TNA, sending veterans over to NXT, and just kind of letting the main roster go. Who do we like out of this, and who do we want to bring up to our country club here, sir?
it's a shame because right now JC's the only good in the sense of results in entertaining wrestling feuds champion on this roster. Hank and Tank are just two dudes with the belt. Like, yeah. I find their act to be just they're annoying guys in the company t-shirt. Like, they are the two guys who work for Progressive Insurance who wear the Progressive Insurance shirts all the time, like the company picnics. Like, even on their day off, they need to remind you that we're all employees of this company. That's Hank and Tank's energy. The main event picture with Oba Femi, it's not really Oba's fault. They have just booked him into absolute boredom. It's just oblivion in the sense of he doesn't really have a character. There's always weird character stuff happening around him. A lot of times it's centered around Trick Williams. But then also, like, the other people he's fighting are not necessarily doing anything for him. Like, Joe Hendry getting beaten by Oba Femi doesn't do a whole hell of a lot for Oba Femi, actually.
And that's a major flaw in NXT is that we don't build the force over here and keep him separate from Oba Femi while he's on his ascent to be an equal challenger to Oba Femi. Instead, what we get are like, look, I think Ethan Page is a perfect foil for Oba Femi, but we've cooled him off with the Ricky Starks feud. And now he can do this North American title thing that he's doing in his sleep. He's been doing it for 10 years in various other promotions as the upper mid-card champion who cuts great promos and has good size and is sufficiently obnoxious enough to carry this whole thing. You know, it kind of like Rick Rude in WWF kind of a thing, if we wanted to go that far. But he's never going to get the great Hogan feud, per se. And as soon as we get a challenger for Oba Femi, we immediately throw him into the ring with Oba Femi and beat him. It feels like Javon Evans may be the guy, but then he gets 4-on-1 power bombed through no fault of his own. So it's like, we're not putting him on a huge hot streak going into any Oba Femi match that's on the horizon necessarily. It's like, we have so much content. We don't keep people apart. And then we don't keep people apart because we want to see how they measure up. And it's something that's been, the women's division has been guiltier of this than the men's division of late. Guess, hey, Kalani Jordan.
But Oba Femi has really, the way they have booked Oba Femi is, it should really be a teachable moment for the booking people in the future of, like, they booked this guy into an absolute corner because he could come out next week and he could beat all four members of Dark State in a gauntlet match for the world title and it would do nothing for him. He could beat them 4-on-1. and it wouldn't do anything for him at this point.
Mm-hmm. Because there's no monster out there that threatens him necessarily.
No, no. Yeah, or even an Ilya Dragunov type of guy who just seems to be this force of... I miss Ilya so much, dude.
Same.
I've already had nostalgic conversations with people about, like, was he the best champion for NXT, you know, like, the last, like 10 years. It's hard. You're so hard-pressed. So hard-pressed to find a better champion for that brand. He was the blueprint, man.
You wanted to go to AEW, sir, so I'll let you go.
We have to, right? That's an obligation of the show. Which one of my favorite main matches should I go after? You know, okay, circling back to Moxley, right? Our buddy mm-hmm. Tony Khan speaking to Josh, explaining that, you know, they need to print in the headlines that he is not mad. John Moxley having an extended squash match against Kevin Knight. But, like, one of two things needed to happen there. John Moxley beats him quickly, or actually only one thing. John Moxley needs to beat him quickly if you still want John Moxley to be an upper, you know, upper tier champion guy. Or you beat him, you know, you have Kevin Knight beat him. But this was so...
Everybody thought Kevin Knight might beat him, but it was in Cincinnati, so that wasn't going to happen. But still, it's baffling. Okay, so John Moxley wants to have
that
a match against...
That would be bad, especially if he beats him in an attrition sort of thing. It's not like a banana peel quick flash roll-up. It's like you ground him down and you eventually got the pin.
Well, he catches him with an aerial move, 1, 2, 3, and then Moxley's like shocked and everybody's shocked. And then we figure out the follow up the next week. I don't see that Jet Speed was going to fight for the, or did fight for the tag team titles. And then Moxley beats them in successive weeks because people were being mean to Speedball. Apparently that whole MVP thing. I'm like, okay, why does Moxley need to be maintained this strong right now? He just lost the title.
I don't get it. And it, I mean, for me, you can go, okay, that's, again, well-worked and logical. But this is a great example of how well-worked and logical doesn't get you all the way there. Like, I Moxley and the Death Riders should be having some sort of existential crisis where either Claudio and Yuta are questioning Moxley's leadership, or Moxley, in an effort to preempt this, is saying, we're back and we are actually more sadistic than ever. Let's get back to first values here.
Yeah, what did my title reign really do to change this company? Nothing. So I have to adjust myself.
Yeah, there's just... This was fine. It, you know, what's great about this match is you could watch it any year and it's more or less going to be the same John Moxley, Kevin Knight match, unless Kevin Knight changes his gimmick.
Give me a choice of which route you want me to take. Do you want me to take Hangman MJF or Cope and Christian?
Let's do Hangman and MJF. I'm okay. I know. We're just gonna, you know, go and pounce all over Edge and Christian sticking.
Yes, we are. We'll do that. Okay. So they got to where they wanted to go to at the end. This is Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck, rabbit season, duck season, fire. I get it. I just did not buy Adam Page being in that much control of the situation. It didn't feel like he was toying with MJF at all. It felt like it was almost like Hangman's doing the Rage Monkey emo bit while still trying to get Max to sign, as opposed to going, you know, Max, the only way you're going to get this. When, in fact, we didn't play upon anything from the ending of that match last week with Mark Briscoe's leg on the rope.
Right.
MJF still getting the pin.
Dude,
and all these other things.
The leg on the rope.
Exactly. And
oh my God.
And we started it with the trope that you've pointed out to me has become the most common and hack thing. you're not really like, this isn't really you. Or
I want the real you.
When he called MJF like the B movie villain,
is it, can monologuer, we call this the Pinocchio promo? Like, I want you to be a real boy. It's like
kind of a thing. It was just like, it got there. I just didn't like the way it got there. I'm not seeing it. And I don't necessarily know if I wanted Hangman to be Bugs Bunny here.
You know, well, I mean, no, because I think it makes control. MJF look really stupid, right? Like, and this is actually, you know, when we talk about how power is laid out here in this company, I guess if you shut your brain off and you believe watching this scene that the world champion of the company has so much stroke in whatever in this particular promotion that they can dictate who does and does not get championship matches against them ever. Okay, maybe you can go there with Adam, go there in this Adam Page scene, but like, there's clearly a beat missing here, which has to be, why would MJF not have the ability to get a title match through conventional means? And right. I think this is entirely possible. You could have him do a beat up Tony Khan angle. You could have some other match that he lost 6 months ago that prohibits him from getting in title content. So, you know, you could do something on that, but you've got to explain that in order to make MJF not look stupid when he is just believing hook, line, and sinker that the only way he can ever get a match for the title is by giving up his get out of jail free card. Like, basically give up his instant rematch pass.
If Mark Briscoe had won that match, he would have gotten a title shot. So why isn't MJF in line for a title shot necessarily? He's right. Won, you know.
Well, yeah, but like, there just needs to be something to explain what precludes MJF from being able to be in conventional title contention. And they've right. never bothered to explain this. And I'll be honest, this, even in the world of wrestling where you can make your own props and everything, this is kind of a hard prop to come up with. I'm trying to think of like, what would be the best mechanism that because precludes the
MJF from getting the title. Yeah, your thought process, the problem with it is everything that you would think would be conventionally it would be something a heel would do to a babyface.
Right, right. Like, so it would have to be something MJF did.
Yeah, I'm playing politics in the back office.
What if he beat up like Tony Schiavone? I mean, 6 months ago, he beat up Tony Schiavone, and that was considered such an incorrigible act that Tony Khan issued an edict that MJF can't challenge for 12 months.
Right.
Something like that. Yeah.
But you have to tell that story. You just can't.
Yeah, you're right. No, you can't. And this is the problem with the real you stuff, as you brought up here. The real you promo is AEW. It's not just AEW, but it's definitely AEW's preferred way of setting up a retcon. That some of this other gimmick work we've been doing in the recent 6 to 8 weeks is kind of not exactly gaining the traction we would like. So we need you to get back to fundamentals. So the fact that they went back to a real you promo doesn't help either. So it's fine. But then I go back to Hangman versus MJF is a feud we have already seen. And now with this setup, Hangman's just in the power position, right? Like, why would Hangman even feel the need to come out and do promos with MJF now?
Yeah, he should be doing promos, but inset promos are like with Alicia or whoever. Do the standard TBS 605 promo at the desk. It's my honor as the world champion of AEW to be representing this company, and MJF, you want a shot, you know, whatever, just cutting the promo as opposed to having this is why I hate a lot of modern wrestling is nobody cuts promos in a vacuum. They all have to be face to face in a ring, in an arena with people yelling what in between each thing and guys reacting or people interrupting or whatever. And nobody ever gets over because nobody ever finishes the promo that they're supposed to be cutting. And it's driving me a little nuts, to be honest with you.
No, I mean, honestly,
that a lot of talent today has not demonstrated a command of the ability to do the dramatic 5-minute monologue style promo, where it's just you, the camera, and you give me something real.
90 seconds. That's all they need.
Give me a real acting. Give me some real acting here. And then obviously the 60 and 90 iterations of that as well.
I have a quick hit before we get to Copen and Christian. So your best pound for pound against Kyle Fletcher after him already. I mean, look, I watched the match from Collision versus Tomohiro Ishii. It was very, very good. 5'8" Hiromu Takahashi versus 6'5", 6'6" Kyle Fletcher. And that's who the legions of New Japan bring out for their warrior against, best pound for pound against Kyle Fletcher for Worlds Collide. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the multi-man party match, all the Young Bucks like post All In Fallout has just done kind of nothing for me. Like they're not there's no character there. There's nothing.
Moxley should be beating their ass for all this comedy stuff that they're doing right now.
Right. If anything, yeah, like the thing that should actually be kind of happening is an implosion of the heels, which would be a very interesting dynamic to do on a show, and kind of a style of weekly TV we haven't seen in a minute, where we see like all the heel factions kind of go to war against each other because they all lost big at the last pay-per-view and none of them are happy right now. I mean, that would be frankly more stimulating than what we're getting. And then obviously we got Adam Copeland and Big Stoke here in our main event. Look, Stoke's given us some great promos along the way here. I enjoy him as a character. FTR have settled into what they are. They are what they are, and I like what they are just fine. But this Edge and Christian part of the puzzle. God.
Cope has the worst creative instincts. And I've been saying this since he was in WWE. He has creative instincts that he needs somebody to say, let's see if we can make that better and fix it. Because, okay, so we get Stokely doing the two spears and just killing himself. Funny. But then Copeland goes out to the audience and he starts interviewing the audience and basically healing on Stoke, you know, about being
bald. But then
bald.
That fell apart on him. That was my favorite part. Well, would anyone have sex with this man? And then someone's like, yeah, actually, I probably would. Yeah, he's all right.
It's like he can't get no hoes. Hey, lady. Wait, is Cope calling a woman in the audience a hoe?
Clear. I mean, you could say he's not, but the sentence doesn't make any sense if he does not understand that woman to speak on behalf of the hoes of America.
Right, and the woman, it's like, I know she's probably a plant and doing a bit, but she's like, are you kidding me right now with this? I go, I'd be saying the same thing if you said,
lady, would you look like a real hoe bag. Yes.
And then he goes back in the ring for a cheap DQ with powder thrown in his face as opposed to actually beating Stokely. And it's like,
right, which is effectively a victory for Stokely here, because Copeland only didn't win the match outright because he was arrogantly toying with the man.
Well, not just that. FTR never really broke the restraining order before he attacked them. They came to the ring. And there were no, I mean, and Cope timed it to dive to the outside of the ring when Cash Wheeler got there, or maybe it was Dax. I forget who got there first, but it's just like, none of this makes sense. And then Christian comes down with Spike to save the day.
One of the dumbest props ever made in professional wrestling. It's up there with Triple H's sledgehammer. I hate Triple H's sledgehammer, and I hate Spike. I hate them both.
This was done for whatever Abyss's equivalent was in TNA, and so, you know, Edge decided creative licensing. I'm going to steal this for myself. I think that's how the order went. But still, at the same time, it's like, okay. So then he hands Spike to Cope, knowing that he can trust him. Cope does the hug, but now Christian isn't reciprocating. And so we're going to do the Sting Luger dynamic type of thing, I think, where Christian hasn't fully bought in when all we want to see is him to buy in. And I think he's going to continue this stubborn streak until Christian turns on Cope again. I really want Toronto to kind of be their retirement match. Not that I don't like both guys, but it's just time, guys. It's time to go away.
It's a shame because it's like I like both of them, and I actually think both of them have tread left on the tires as a tag team, but it's so clear that this AEW stop was ultimately not you could debate it more with Christian, I suppose, but boy, it just has not really been much of anything at all for Edge. It has been an absolute waste of his time and, you know, the tread on his tires, which is wearing down.
Yeah. They're rushing this to get to the Kip Sabian, Nick Wayne match. Whereas just bypass that match, do it on a random Collision or Dynamite down the road on the road to All Out and we'll be fine. But we still had weeks where we had to get Christian and Cope kind of talking to each other and kind of vibing with each other. And instead it's going to be, they're going to do it in the ring. They're going to figure out it's just like old times. And here comes Tony going, see, that was great storytelling because I did it through the match as opposed to actual angles and world building and whatnot. I'm going to go, no, you forced them together real quick. And now it feels contrived. I'm done, man.
It feels contrived. And like Christian's character is really just his outfit cut. Mm-hmm. Like it's not even a character anymore. It's just the way he dresses.
It's just his aura coming out and being a jerk.
Yeah. He comes out there. Yeah. He like comes off and, you know, Aura Farms being a really big jerk has it, like that certain cut of clothes, like that London style of cut that, makes you kind of look like an asshole. He sells the part really nicely, but it's not a character. It's just a look. It is to being a character what logic and like good fundamentals are to a good wrestling match, which is part of, but like necessary, but not sufficient for the condition.
Let's go to Vader Club for a party match from 1992 that I loved. Rick Rude, Bobby Eaton, Arn Anderson, and Larry Zbysko versus Sting, Dustin Rhodes, Barry Windham, and Ricky Steamboat. And when I say this is exactly what you think it would be, everybody playing the hits, it was everybody playing the hits, man. Bobby Eaton feeding, Arn Anderson being that grizzled smart guy where he's like, I'm not going in, I'm going to point to my head and get heat. Larry Zbysko whining, taking powders, complaining about baby faces. I know Joe Lanza doesn't like Larry Zbysko. I love Larry Zbysko. He is such a perfect brat. Yes.
Yeah. I think the character is a very simple one, which is he's a second generation wrestler who's a brat. I like that. I like the whole when Zbysko turned heel the first time, it was basically that he was supposed to be the super successful, you know, second generation guy. And he came up a little bit short and broke him. I like that.
Yeah.
Simple.
Dustin Rhodes had some stuff in this match that I adored. There's a thing with Eaton where he's doing like an arm, hammerlock or something. He turns into an arm lock, does a flip, flips over Bobby or something like that. That's a move. And I go, my God, this guy can move. And then he did the spot where he does the head scissors on, I think it's Zbysko, and Arn Anderson's on the outside and just yanks his head down across the top rope. It was such an Arn Anderson Dangerous Alliance type move. You know, Paulie looking spelt in the suit and the giant phone. Some horrid, horrid commentary on this match because it's Jim Ross and the tailor-made man, Terry Taylor. And Terry Taylor is abysmal in this, but you get Sting being Sting. You get Barry hitting the ropes like a G, you know, for his stuff. And of course, Ricky Steamboat, when he comes in for the hot tag, chops, going up to the top rope, doing the cross body thing.
Speedball and Mike Bailey, watch some Ricky Steamboat and figure out what he has that you don't.
And of course, Rude being the alpha heel, you know, just kind of being the ring general, but also taking turns getting his ass beat by the baby faces. A fun go home match.
I love Rude selling, right? Like, it's like Rude will go from making his offense look really stiff and mean looking to what he has, what he takes of offense, it's death. I like the dichotomy between the way he delivers offense and the way he takes offense is one of my favorites of anybody.
Now, we've discussed this because in the course of the WCW run, he of course was given the, especially in 92 before he retired, he was kind of, or not 92, but in that, you know, when he was, they were building the Vader feud and the Flair feud, they gave him that tough guy, tough heel credibility. Do you forgive the cartoonishness of when he takes a Manhattan drop or an atomic drop where it's just the cartoonish overselling of getting hit in the genitals?
Yes, because I think that it's there's a fan psychology thing here where it is, what do the fans want out of watching a Rick Rude match, which is seeing a guy who all of their women are drooling over get embarrassed and be put into an embarrassed and humiliating situations. Like Rude comes out, the girls scream for him, including maybe even your girlfriend. And then all of a sudden in the match, he takes, you know, one shot to the balls and he's running around in like the parlance of the 1980s, like an anti-boy. Oh, he's not such a big man now, is he, honey? See, honey? See, he's not so big now. Yeah, we're still going home together, right? You know, that sort of situation.
Yeah, and it's also, it's his flare flop, quite frankly. It doesn't make him lose the credibility. It's just, it's the laugh spot you do early in the match before we really get into the nitty gritty of Rick Rude being a fantastic wrestler and doing like the Iron Man.
The flare flop's a really good analog too, because there's many different iterations of the flare flop, so it's hard to say, you know, any one, but a lot of like the psychology to me of the flare flop is Flair always comes in as this prestigious champion, and this flare flop, a lot of times, especially when he gets up, he's like, put up your dukes, put them there, that sort of thing. There's this like fighting champion spirit that then bloop goes right out of him. You know, he goes flat. And I think that kind of cartoonish sell, when it is done in, essentially it's done in service of the character, and when it's understood and executed in service of the character, it's certainly not a crime.
And no WWF 50-50 booking here. Larry Zbyszko takes the pin from Ricky Steamboat. Further giving question two, is Larry Zbyszko going to be the weak link in the 1992 War Games, which he did end up being, because he's the guy who eventually surrendered, despite the fact that it's basically Bobby Eaton's fault that he had to surrender. I think that's how it goes. I think it was, I forget if Zbyszko brought in the tool and then Bobby Eaton surrendered, or Bobby Eaton brought in the tool and Zbyszko eventually surrendered, but Zbyszko was basically blamed for that loss, and that supplement his babyface turn that was short-lived, and then he eventually went to the commentary desk. But a fun WCW Saturday Night Party match as the go-home for Super Bowl 92. That'll do it for us. I'm Jeff Hawkins. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. I do a show called The Dynamite Show on the Fight Game Media Network every Wednesday about 20 minutes after, about 20 minutes after the top of the hour, because AEW goes off off the air at like 7 after now, so there's always an overrun. But Paul Fontaine and I go live on YouTube. It drops free into your podcatchers the next morning, doing a thorough deconstruction of that week's AEW. Chris is on Instagram. He'll plug that and his music now.
Yeah, go. If you're in Albuquerque area, go subscribe to Elevated Roots, the band ELOVATED, Elevated, like love in the middle of the name, is Elton's whole gimmick there. Elevated Roots is the name of the band. Please come on out and see us. I'll be playing with them until my shoulder falls off, but hopefully a little less long than that. And then, if you want to subscribe to my Spotify, you certainly can. Album just stuck in a little bit of production hell. Done. Everything's done, which is kind of cool to say. But still just stuck in a little bit of production hell. We're waiting. I mean, I'm waiting now on mixes and stuff. I might go another direction. If I decide to back out and do it, everything just gets set back more and it costs more money. So probably just going to ride this out. Everything takes longer than you think it's going to, kids.
It's a phenomenal plug.
It really is. It really is. I love the arts.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends, to breakdowns on individual performers and angles, to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.